Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's the Mitchin Podcast.
Hey, what's up? Hello, and welcome to the Mitchin. We are a weekly food podcast hosted by two gentlemen. One of their names is Mitchell Orr.
We moved ourselves up in the
No longer are we boys. We are now gentlemen. My name's Andrew Levins. Every week we talk about food on this podcast. We have a special guest joining us this week. Returning to the show for the first time in a long time is Lauren Eldridge.
Hello, everyone.
Last time you were on the show, Mark was still a restaurant.
Yes.
And you were the pastry chef at Mark.
Correct.
Since then, you have done a stint at Paymodern. You've been all over the world.
I have, yeah.
Or potentially one place that I know you've been to.
Throughout Europe, but I was mostly in Italy.
Okay.
At Osteria Francescana, and then I came back and was at Paymodern for about 6 months.
And I just last week asked you if you would be free to come on the show and then find out that you're going to move to Melbourne.
I am. I'm moving to Melbourne tomorrow.
So lucky we got in.
Good
just in time. Yeah. It's a fucking chef exodus, Mitch.
Get out. Keep it going.
I was wondering if that was going to come up as a topic. I felt like every time I opened the paper, there was just like chef moving. I'm like, oh. I feel like, I don't know if it's
Melbourne needs the help. And we could do with a bit less competition.
Maybe we should do an article, 10 Sydney chefs who should move to Melbourne. that would do numbers.
That would be pretty funny.
Hit me up, good food. I'll write it for you. It's really controversial. But Lauren, what are you moving to Melbourne to do?
So I will still be a pastry chef down in Melbourne. So I'll be working for Stoke House and the Associated Restaurants. So they have four restaurants in Melbourne and one in Brisbane, Stoke House Q. So I'll be the group head pastry chef, primarily at Stoke House though.
Unreal. Awesome. So yeah, like a bunch of different restaurants.
Yeah, several different restaurants and menu development and sort of overseeing all the pastry teams and training and things like that. And yeah, it's slightly bigger role than my last one. Mark was just me in a little room. So this is a bit of a step up. Thought it was worth moving to Melbourne for, even though I'm a bit of a Sydney girl.
Were there styles of cooking that you weren't able to do in Mark because it didn't really suit the restaurant that you're going to be able to do now? Or?
I think, yeah, given that they have multiple venues, there's room for more casual styles of food as well. I think it's sort of going to be the challenge to find the balance between what I normally do and what I had done at Mark and what works for the customers down at Stoke House. I think they're slightly more classic than Mark, but I feel like that's the case with most restaurants. I found that up in Sydney, there wasn't anywhere that I felt I could do the food that I wanted to do, or even that maybe the customers up here didn't really want that style of food anymore, which, you know, they don't have to. I think it's just changed. So hopefully I can find something down in Melbourne that works.
Yeah, sweet. Looking forward to seeing what you do there.
Thanks.
And thanks for spending your last day in Sydney with us. The bucket list.
Yeah. Take everyone off.
So today on the show, we're going to be talking about burgers. We're going to be talking about fake allergies. And if you listened to our show last week, you will remember that we discussed an article that Lauren wrote for Good Food about women in the hospitality industry. We can discuss that at length a bit later in the show. But first, I want to ask you guys, what have you eaten lately? Anything good?
No.
No? What? No. So have you eaten anything bad?
Yeah, I ate Macca's twice on the weekend.
I just had avocado toast, but That's pretty standard.
At Macca's?
Not at Macca's, at Devon Cafe. So that was good. I've been living at home since I'm moving tomorrow. So moved out of Surry Hills. So I've just been eating a lot of home-cooked food, which is a really nice change, actually.
You're not venturing out into the culinary incredible place that is Wesley?
The Wesleyan Thornley. Not quite. I did go to an Afghani restaurant in Thornley.
Is that the one on Pennant Hills Road?
It is.
And it's like it's called like Zach's.
Zach's Great Food. I've been going there since I was about 10. And his kids went to my high school and all that sort of stuff. So moved back, thought I'd...
But it's hilarious because it's like Afghan food and then steaks.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Seafood. So when I went for like the first 10 years of my life, when I used to go every single time, I would only order chicken schnitzel. So I try to be a bit more adventurous this time.
The Afghan classic.
Yeah.
I've never... My parents live in Hornsby,
right.
Wurunga, and I drive Pennant Hills Road all the time. And I always see he has this, the sign is a picture of his head. Like Zach's Great Food.
Yeah, sort of like a silhouette.
So it is actually decent?
Yeah, the food's really... I mean, I don't know many Afghani restaurants, especially not out that way. So
yeah, totally.
It's, it was quite full on a Thursday night.
Big old skewers and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the big skewers and...
flatbread and stuff.
All the different flatbreads and dips and a lot of traditional dishes. So they do just have a small bit now. It used to be mostly steaks and stuff like that, but they're sort of aiming towards more Afghani food, which I think is good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Shout to Zach's.
Yeah.
Mitch and I were in the snow over the weekend. I had a gig. We're Halfway Crooks on Saturday night at Threadbow. So Mitch came along with us and did hit the slopes over the weekend. It's a 5.5 hour drive to Threadbow.
Depends who's driving.
Let it be known that I am the faster of Crooks drivers. Still very safe. No speeding tickets for me. I just want to give a quick shout out to on the way there, we the inevitability of you're either going to go Macca's or Pies. That's the great road trip choices. Question. And we went pie on the way up, really decent shepherd's pie, the good mash, bit of cheese on top, chunky steak, some peas in there. I was vibing, but you can't eat two fucking pies in one weekend.
No.
That's insanity.
For some reason, you can eat Macca's twice in a weekend though.
Yeah, I think it was more just the timing of when we... when Franco and I went down and came back, it sort of didn't line up with anything else. So it was a matter of, I need to eat something now. And this is basically the only option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be you go on a road trip and every half hour there'd be something.
Yeah.
And now because it's just all highway, unless you pull off and take half an hour, add half an hour into your trip.
Yep.
It's literally only Macca's and there's only three on the whole trip down. So... If you, on the way down, we sort of missed the last one in Canberra, in Queanbeyan or whatever, and the next one was until Cooma.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're we're not quite hungry yet. And then by the time we got to Cooma, I'm so hungry.
It was 9:45
and it was, yeah, it was 10 p.m., so KFC had shut already, so I had to So, yeah.
I drove down to Melbourne in the last few weeks looking for apartments and things, and we had to do Macca's twice because the only... thing on the way down, unless you stop in those truck stops that actually don't have food, it's just a seedy toilet on the side of the road. You've just got those massive service centers, so it's just fast food or chips.
Yeah, the
basically.
Ones on if you ever do the kind of long drives through America, that their turnpike stops are crazy because there'll be six different fast food chains.
Yeah.
That you can check out
and diners and shit like that.
Totally.
Too,
yeah, totally. But I want to give a shout out to a spot on the way there. We're driving through Breadbow, which is why is there a place called Breadbow?
You kind of made that up. Yeah,
it's pretty low. It's four houses.
Yeah. It's it's a full on town, Breadbow. We were making jokes that it was named by a blood, it's YG's favorite rural New South Wales town, Breadbow. I drove through there on the way there, and I noticed it's kind of just this big sign that said good food, and smoked pork and pumpkin soup, and I was it was right, and then it was just this little food truck, and we'd already eaten pies on the way there, so I was okay, we're coming back tomorrow, hopefully they're open on Sundays, and sure enough, as we came through Breadbow. the Ingalara Farm Truck is what they're called. And you can follow them on Instagram, which is Ingalara Farm Truck, one word. Already followed by previous guest of the Mitch and Toby Wilson. So the guy knows his shit. And it was just two guys in this little truck. They had a little smoker out the front that they kind of propped their signs up. And yeah, they smoke at night. So they had pork on the day before. They had chickens on when we went there. And you get like a little tub with like some pieces of smoked chicken, some slaw, and a piece of sourdough that they make themselves. And then they have pumpkin soup and all that kind of gear. And like, I don't know, for like the middle of nowhere road trip food, like having raw vegetables was so good.
Yeah, that's pretty epic.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And then slaw, And it was decent food. It was better than most barbecue you eat in Sydney, to be honest. So yeah, highly recommend if you ever drive into the snow, make sure you stop at the Ingalara Farm Truck. Good stuff. Mitch, speaking of burgers, what did you order at Macca's, by the way?
I had a cheeseburger on the way down, a nuggets, and a Big Mac on the way back.
Burgered it up. Terry Durack in Good Food this week, he said that enough is enough. We have reached peak burger.
Thanks, Terry.
Basically, this is a comment section he wrote about Sydney being in the middle of a burger epidemic, a plague of sesame seed buns, a pandemic of beef patties, a pestilence of pickles.
Great alliteration there.
Once upon a time, a burger was a treat. My mates and I used to drive through five suburbs late on a Friday night just to get a burger. So he talks about burger places that opened in the 1930s. I don't think Terry is that old. I think he wishes he was sometimes. but I was hoping this is going to be a comment on how stupid burgers are getting in Sydney, because that's something that we've been kind of posting about on the Mitchin Facebook page. You can find it at facebook.com/TheMitchin. Instead, it's just kind of like, oh, there's too many burger restaurants. And like... kind of, but not really. Like, there always are heaps of burger restaurants. It just now means that we've got better chefs making better burgers. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there does seem to be a lot everywhere, but I feel like it was bigger 6 months, 12 months ago, and maybe that's because that's when they were all opening, or I used to see a lot more posted on Facebook about them and, like, people lining up for special burgers, yeah, which I find definitely particularly bizarre.
It's definitely been a quick rise from, from Hongi's Burger at Lotus and Mary's opening to now people, it's kind of that trend thing that happens, someone opens something that's really successful. So people go, oh, fuck, we can do that too. And they jump on it. But, Chur Burger was around for a while.
Yeah, it's been around for ages.
But now it's literally everyone who wants to get into the food industry opens a burger place.
Or a burger truck.
Truck. Some of them are great and is like a good spread of where they are and that kind of thing. But there's also a lot that's not to be celebrated.
It's almost like they have their main restaurant and then they open the burgers on the side because they're like, yes, money. I don't know if that is still the case when there's such an influx of burger places opening, but.
Yeah, look, I think I'll, like, the article is, it's fine, just like it's a little rant, but I think he should have pointed out that some of them are good.
Yeah, exactly.
And don't like, because in saying, he basically says just say no, don't eat your burgers. He says eat one a week or one a month or one a year. He's calling it the burger off. Don't think that's going to catch on. I checked.
I hope it doesn't catch on.
I checked burger off the hashtag on to see if it was trending online. And in fact, it's just people having a burger off. So if anything, that hashtag is encouraging more burgers. it does tie into something that I have noticed as an ongoing problem in Sydney. And I got into a little bit of trouble on our Facebook page this week when I posted about a new segment called the fucking dumbest fuck burger of 2017.
I can't see why you would get in trouble for that.
So, freak burgers is the big trend.
Are these like freak milkshakes? Because I definitely have an issue with them. Yeah. So, if we're along the same path, then I feel like I won't like them.
Yeah. So, essentially, it is like, imagine a burger. And often, it's places that already do a perfectly good burger. A good cheeseburger or whatever. And like, in order to get crazy hits on Facebook and Instagram, and I imagine it does bring in a few extra customers as well. They do these big, enormous, ridiculous burgers that have like stacks of so many different toppings and mismatched cuisines. I put up one a few weeks ago on the page that was, and I always show up in like sponsored links on Facebook, so they know I like burgers every now and then. It'll be like one that is covered in like spaghetti. So it'll be
no one can see my, well, maybe you can see my face, but that sounds horrible. Like, why?
It looks horrible.
It looks like vomit on a burger. Like it's like someone threw up the spaghetti that they ate so they could then eat the burger. This week I shot it out at a place that I actually like, Down and Out. It's up the road from where I used to be at the Dip. They're in the Sir John Young, that pub on the corner of Liverpool and George. They do a really decent cheeseburger. They opened up with like very cheeky In-N-Out referencing decor when they opened up, and then they've kind of become their own, a bit more of their own entity thing. But they put out one called the Fat Boy, and this one is a southern fried pepper steak, which already that is an extremely intense flavor combination, like a pepper steak with which has been deep fried.
Sounds
it's an enormous deep fried steak covered in bacon and mushroom ragu.
How do you eat ragu on a burger?
You just dump it on top of the fried steak. There's Parmesan aioli. That's one cheese. Then there's a four cheese blend. So that means five cheeses in total. Caramelized onion, and on top skewered is a lemon wedge.
Is that a lemon? What are you?
I don't know.
Quite clearly, you need a bit of acid to cut through and lift all that. Cut through those other flavors.
Ragu and fried pepper steak.
So that's
horrible.
That spaghetti burger that I was talking about came with a topper. They always come with a topper, a big skewer through the topper, and you put a topper. It had a wonton topper. So it was like a cheeseburger with spaghetti, 100 cheeses, and then a fucking wonton on top.
I'm assuming they make these for Instagram. That's basically it. So that they get this Instagram following, and then people find out about their restaurant, or they get one of those little videos on the insider or whatever, and then people start coming in. But is that the main reason that they're making food now?
Down and Out did the at the height of Pokemon Go's popularity, the app, they did three Pokemon burgers, and I actually was like, I give them merit for actually restraining themselves. Like they colored the buns, so there was a yellow one for Pikachu, one for Bulbasaur, one for Charizard. And then the Charizard one was spicy. The leafy Pokemon had more vegetables on it. And it was like, that's fine. You know, they weren't too ridiculous.
I don't know if that's considered restraining themselves, is it?
I mean, they're not dumping a pile.
Restraining themselves would not be doing Pokemon
Pokemon burgers, yeah.
But like that was, you know, from a business point of view, that's clever marketing that capitalized on something that was big at the time. And like, adding to like the Pokemon nature, you don't know what you're going to get when you get a new Pokemon or whatever. So you ordered a Pokemon burger not knowing if it would be Pikachu, Charizard or Bulbasaur, I think was the other one. Right. this is like, I don't know, this is a perfect example of these burgers that are just unnecessarily big and covered in toppings. Like I said in the post, like, you know, important factors for looking for fuck burgers. We're calling them fuck burgers.
Right, okay.
Like, don't censor yourself and call them freak burgers. Yeah. These are the fuck boys of burgers. These are the kind of burgers that line up for, you know, 6 hours to get a supreme natcom. These are fuck burgers. And so important factors when looking for fuck burgers are mismatched cuisines, unappealing garnishes, and more than one cheese. I'm sure there are many other factors. And I posted this on Facebook, and there's a plethora of
Anytime you can't put your mouth around it.
Yeah.
That's really, really true.
Straight up, it's why?
What's the point?
You sort of, as soon as you like take a bite of a burger, you then cannot remove your hands. That's like the burger eating rule. Two hands as soon as you start.
Yeah.
And I feel like you can't even take a bite of that. Like,
you know, actually, from a size point of view, Down and Out, nowhere near as ridiculous as some of the other ones that get posted in this one. Like one of them is like, instead of burger buns, they use cheese and bacon rolls. Yeah. And like, so basically every week now we're going to do fuck burger of the week on the mention. And at the end of the year, we're going to try and pick the fuck burger of the year. So if you would like to nominate a burger that you see in the wild.
Is this encouraging them though?
I don't know, because we're saying it's dumb. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I got the guys from Down and Out, who I'm friends with on Facebook, were like, what the fuck? Why are you throwing a burger out? And I was like, look, it is in jest. You can't deny that this is a
stupid.
What?
And he swears it's delicious. Could well be delicious.
It's fucking not. Don't do something dumb and then get upset when you get caught out for doing something fucking stupid.
He's not the only one though, and there are countless other far stupider restaurants, which I'm going to call out every week from now on.
When they're creating these, right, and they're like, let's do a pepper steak burger, and they're like, you know what'll make these better? Frying it. At what point do they go, you know what else will make these better? Like,
five cheeses.
Five cheeses and a ragu. Or are they just like, let's put something. I feel like they're going, let's put something stupid
a,
on
I
it.
I made a ragu and I forgot to order pasta. What can we do with this ragu?
Fuck, I've got an extra box of mushrooms in the fridge. Let's put them on a burger.
But like, I mean, look, burgers are already the unhealthy option. Even if you were just getting, you know, even if you're fucking getting grilled and you're convincing yourself, oh, this is a healthy burger.
Don't like, get grilled.
I'd never get grilled.
Grilled's actually even worse.
Get a fucked burger before you get grilled. But what I'm saying is that, like, you know, Sydney and the people that love burgers don't need more encouragement to eat incredibly unhealthy shit.
No, let's just eat. Why is the focus not quality and consistency? Why is the focus be as stupid as we can be?
But maybe this ties into Terry's article. There are too many burger restaurants
and
now,
and
you need to do
themselves.
Dumb things to stand out.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. I think it's competition. And once one person does something fucking stupid and gets a big response for it, then that pushes everyone else to do something stupid to pull the response back to their restaurant. You know what I mean? But
yeah, so
like no one wants to fucking eat that.
And well, there are people, I mean, like posting drooling emojis and like, you know. And,
yeah, but are those people actually going and fucking eating it?
Look, so I was told.
I mean, how much is the restaurant going, yes, I think this is delicious, I really want to make it? And how much is it them responding to customers' reactions of that one stupid video they've seen from some American burger place and now it's just like filtered down
to
here?
It'd be interesting to see what after. Okay, people might be drooling on that post before they go and eat it, but are people posting them eating it and going, oh, it's so good, I'm coming back again for it?
You know what I mean? I feel like people would be doing that even if they didn't necessarily like it because I feel like they're not eating it.
Yeah.
It's like that Instagram thing where like...
It's a freak shake thing.
It looks great, colourful thing
that took no skill to put
together.
It doesn't look great.
It doesn't look great.
Yeah. Look, by all means, go to Down and Out. Eat one of their cheeseburgers. Their cheeseburgers are some of the best you'll get in Sydney. And it's a good place to have a beer on tap and a burger, which is a rarity in Sydney at the moment. So, I don't know. Like, fuck burgers. They're stupid. Don't make them. Don't eat them. That's my amendment to Terry's article.
That's what Terry's article should have been.
Yeah.
About fuck burgers.
That's also, two sentences.
Yeah. So please send in your fuck burgers of the week. We have reached peak fuck burger. You can email us themitchin@gmail.com or themitchinpodcast@gmail.com or facebook.com/themitchin. Hit him, tag us, put him in the comments. I want to read one out and show one every week. So let's move on to less fuck burgery things. This is still fuck burgery in a way. Our good friend Patrick Friesen this weekend managed to inspire a good article in the Daily in the Telegraph of all places. The headline is allergic in little commas, diners driving chefs crazy with picky demands. And this is definitely something that we've talked about in the past, but it was cool to see an entire article dedicated just outlining a problem that's facing restaurateurs at the moment. And just driving kitchens fucking crazy. Basically, it's diners going in and saying that they're allergic to you know, things that people are allergic to, like gluten or peanuts. And then once they, you know, find out how those ingredients are used in the menu, they're like, oh, wait, no, I'm not that allergic to them. And it gets, you know, it gets a lot more complicated than that. And they're amazing. You know, if you follow either Pat or Dan Hong, it seems Merivale venues seem to attract these kind of people more than any other venues in Sydney for some reason. They'll always put up receipts with just tons of amendments for allergies, gluten, shellfish, you know, onions. Can you be allergic to onions?
Yeah, you can have an allium allergy group.
But you know, this isn't an article about the fact that food allergies exist. It's about people that. It's not that they're allergic, it's that they don't like or they don't know that they like certain ingredients, and so they say they're allergic to them, and then upon finding out how small it's been incorporated into the food, they are like, oh, I'm not that allergic to it, it's fine.
I mean, I haven't been working for a while, but it was definitely an issue at Mark, and we only had one menu, and it was when you take the booking, and most restaurants do this, they ask if there's any requirements. And then when you sit down, you're asked again if there are any requirements. And it's like they either come up with a whole list of things. And normally if they have a really serious allergy, they're aware that like the restaurants need to know.
Yeah.
And they will email you at the beginning, or they make it quite clear. But then you've got people who like the dish is put down in front of them and they're like, oh, I'm allergic to that.
Yeah.
And then you have to change the whole rest of the menu. Or it's just, I don't think they realize the flow and effect it has for everybody else that's either dining that night or for the kitchen or just for people with actual allergies. Like, they just think, oh, I don't want to eat that.
The rule should be, if you have an allergy, real or fake, call up the day before.
Just give notice. When give you make warning. A booking, say, hey, I have these requirements, and then cool. And then come in and then remind your waiter at the start of the meal, not halfway through or after you've eaten half a dish, and go, oh, actually, you know, like, restaurants, we're in a hospitality business, right? We're here to make your experience as pleasurable as possible. And if you give a restaurant notice, and, you know, most restaurants now are so over having to fucking chop and change to people's whims in the middle of service that we try and make our menus as tolerable to as many dietaries as possible from the start. So we have to do less work in the heat of service when it can throw everybody's night out, from the customers to the kitchen to the wait staff. You know, it has a wide-ranging effect. When
what are some ingredients that you use less with that thinking?
We now use gluten-free soy or tamari instead of soy. We'll use gluten-free fish sauces and oyster sauces. We don't put, you know, we make everything so we cannot have the dairy component to it. We make everything, you know, we make 80 to 90% of our dishes so we can take a seafood component or a meat component out to make it vegetarian or vegan. You know what I mean? Or we have a balance across the menu, so if someone does come in, we can take different things from each dish and create new dishes to cover dietaries. But when you come in and you say, can you not cook anything with butter? I'm, you know, and then you eat ice cream at the end of the meal. It's shit like that. Yeah, you know
the,
what
the
I mean?
Gluten free who eat the bread.
Yeah.
Like that's painful.
If you're a celiac, we take it really seriously. We have gluten free pasta. We'll cook it in different water. And, you know, you can generally tell when someone is celiac and when someone just decides that they don't want to eat gluten. And for starters, if you just don't want to eat gluten, why are you coming to a pasta restaurant?
But yeah, that's the thing I never understood. They come in and they're like, oh, I don't eat this, or this. I'm like, then what? Like,
why
did you come here? That's the bit I don't understand. I understand that people want a nice experience, but there are restaurants that specifically cater to, like, vegans or gluten-free or dairy-free, and there's so many options that to go to a restaurant that you know specifically doesn't do that. I just think it's
when you go to a restaurant that's a set menu and then don't give notice.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, we'll go out of our way to make your meal great. Like, I've got a lot of vegan friends now. I have some celiac friends. So I understand and I know, and we're conscious of it, and we'll work to make that meal still as memorable as it can be and still an Acme experience. But just give notice and don't take the piss. And think about the people who actually have those problems, because like it said in that article, when so many people take the piss, it numbs the industry to people with actually serious issues. So chances are people get lax and go, oh, it's probably just another idiot pretending who's going to eat the bread, and so we'll put some soy in it or whatever it might be. And that actually can affect people with real allergies. And it's a huge problem, you know. Just don't be a fuckwit. Don't come and halfway through your meal decide, oh, I can't eat that.
I just developed an egg allergy.
Yeah. I don't feel like eating this tonight.
My brother's girlfriend is allergic to chocolate, the cocoa mass part. So she can eat white chocolate because it doesn't have any of the dark part. So it's quite a specific allergy. But they went to a restaurant recently, and quite a, you know, well-known restaurant, quite reputable, and I've been several times, never had an issue, but...
It rhymes with back knee.
She sent them an email beforehand saying, because they have a set menu, saying that, like, I can't eat chocolate, detailing the specifics. When she went in, they acknowledged it. When she came in, she sat down, and then when it got to desserts, they served two dishes with chocolate. One was like an extra one because it was their anniversary, and when the waiter put it down, he goes, "Oh, maybe just you can just eat around this bit." And it was like there was a big thing of chocolate in the middle of the plate. And she was like, is he serious? And then when the extra dish came out, he put it down. It was a share thing. And he looked at my brother and goes, "Oh, guess only you can eat this one." And walked off. And the kitchen, I later found out, didn't even know that there was somebody in the restaurant that couldn't eat chocolate. And it's almost as if the...
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
If the waiter just made a call like, "Oh, shoot, that's a stupid allergy. No one's allergic to that, you know," and just decided not to tell anyone. And it's stuff like that, that if people come in and just say, "Oh, I can't eat this," but they actually can when somebody actually, you know, I mean, it ruined their entire experience to get to dessert and be like, "Just eat around it." It's like, yeah.
It's your fake problem.
Probably make me really sick. Like, it just, you know. It just thinks it's stupid.
And like, it goes on us too. But like, you look at the dockets that Pat posted, and when literally every single dish needs to be altered in some way. And I'm sure there's a hell of a lot of dishes on that menu that wouldn't have needed to be altered. You know, and the same with Acme. Like, if you have at any restaurant, if you have a dietary, come in, and if things are made clear to you, these things are straight up good, you don't have to worry about them, you can eat those dishes as they are, and then you decide not to order any of those dishes. Like, we have people that come in with nut allergies and order the one pasta that has nuts in it and say, "Can you, there's six other things that you can have already that don't need any change to them." And it's, you know, that dish is thought out by the chef as a balance of flavors, textures, etc., etc. So when you take something away, the dish isn't as good as it's going to be. You know, just think about it. And then that slows down service for everybody, especially in a restaurant. That's a Chinese restaurant. Everything's going out to share. So the menu and the kitchen is designed like that to send food in that order. So when they have to stop and cook one dish and one dish and one dish and change everything in those dishes, it slows down service for the entire restaurant. So you're not only affecting your experience, you're affecting everybody else as well.
Have you ever heard of this happening, or you think maybe this is too extreme, but just saying, "No, we don't alter our dishes unless you give us notice in advance"?
Yeah, well, Chang used to do that at Momofuku.
Right.
Was like notorious for it, and he's softened since. Lil was my sous chef, was recently in Europe, and a starred restaurant in Europe had on the menu, if you require changes, is a 30 euro fee.
Whoa.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
And that's...
It's extreme, but I mean, extreme. If they need to do it, they need to
do
it.
Yeah, but it probably just stops people pulling this kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like if someone emailed ahead and said, hey, I have this serious allergy, I'm sure it would be no issue for the restaurant. But when people come in and say, if you haven't told us about your allergies or your dietaries, and you come in and you say, I need to change this and this, 30 euro.
Well, it's probably, as you said, that chefs, we now design dishes so that they are dietary friendly. So yeah. If they need to change something, it's like because they pick that one pasta on the menu that has nuts when they have other options. And we're not, I don't know, I don't think chefs aren't opposed to, most chefs now aren't opposed to making food for people. We had a raw vegan. He came into Mark, but they gave us like 2 weeks notice, so we did an 8-course.
Yeah, exactly. Raw
vegan most chefs like
menu.
The challenge.
Like, yeah, we can do it. It's just don't be an asshole about it.
Yeah. I've had the other end of it as well, where someone had just had an operation and so had really strict dietary requirements because it had to do with the digestive system and all this kind of thing. And they sent us an email with everything listed out. And we went, cool. And we did all this extra stuff and created all this stuff for them. And it all came back and said, no, I just want the steamed vegetable side that's on the menu.
Right.
So we went like above and beyond and still had it thrown back in our face. Like we still fucked up. You know what I mean? So you can't please everyone all the time.
I mean that they probably life, had, but they probably had instances where, you know, they thought everything was going to be good and then
yeah,
ended up fucking
100%,
with it.
You know, but it's tough.
At least they didn't wait for the food to get sent to your table.
And then, yeah.
Cool. Lauren, let's talk about your article that you wrote 2 weeks ago. We talked about it last week with Lee Tran Lam. I always forget the title of the article because they gave it a very funny title. Former Josephine Pignolet winner returns volley. And this is about your return to tennis.
Yeah.
That's why you're moving to Melbourne.
My tennis career is back on track.
It is basically... please. I hate summarizing things. But I know you could do a much better job than I.
So, it started... There was an article in The Age a week before I wrote this. There's a new chief executive of the Restaurant Catering Association, and she had seen a picture of the finalists of the Josephine Pignolet Award for this year. And in that picture in the paper, there's only one female. There's only one female finalist. And she was quoted in the article as saying, you know, I saw this picture. There's something wrong with that picture. I think there should be 4 or 5 women, like, in the finalist, like, in that photo. And then you know, she went on to say other things and that she hasn't discussed it with the board yet, but she would like to promote women in the industry. So I think the point of what she was saying was that she wants to see more women actively involved in the industry, which, you know, I agree with. I think I made the point that, yes, it would be a great image to see more women in that photo or in the finals.
And are you the only female winner of the Josephine Pignolet Awards in the last decade, I mean?
Yeah. For the last, quite a long time. So I basically went on to say that, you know, we can't put quotas on things like the Josephine Pignolet Award because, to me, that makes it even more unfair to both men and women who do enter, because if you've got women entering and then the finalists, there's 5 women... It sort of then takes on the like, oh, they only reached the finals because they're a girl and they needed to make up numbers. And there's already a lot of this like token female in competitions or in panels and stuff. So I think that quotas just encourage that. And so the rest of the article sort of went on to say that we need to approach it from a different angle. And I think the media needs to be a lot more involved in promoting women and giving them recognition. But at the same time, the right sort of recognition, because there's very little acknowledgement of female chefs without just recognizing them because they're a female and they happen to be a chef.
Five female chefs really bring in their A game in 2017. And
10 female chefs that should move to Melbourne.
I mean, and Delicious Magazine have a new initiative called, I think it's hashtag Girls on Fire. It's sort of like, yes, it's a good start to promote women, but even just calling them Girls on Fire is just making it quite novel. And it's almost as if the media industry doesn't know how to promote the women, or it's like they still want to, like, they want to be like, oh, yes, we really need to promote women. Let's promote females, and then, like, females everywhere. And there was an article in the Sunday Telegraph recently, and they wanted female pastry chefs from Sydney. Not, you know, it's pretty narrow stream. So
specifically Wesley.
There was 7 or 8 of us, and after the interview, I was talking to the journalist, and I just said, you know, when you promote us, don't put female in the headline. We're just chefs like everybody else, and like every other chef. It doesn't matter if we're male or female. So she was like, oh, I don't write the headlines, but I understand what you mean. And then I saw the paper and the headline was like pastry princesses. Oh, and gosh. I was like, oh, no. I was like, that's even worse than using the word female. And it's just stuff like that that I think needs to change. So there are a lot of people that there were some people that came to me and said, like, we need quotas because it's the only way we can break into it. But I think it's a very short-term solution for a greater problem. So
Do you think that's true, though, that we need to have quotas for women to break through?
No.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
I don't think it is. I think there's already a lot of women in the industry, and a lot of people come out and say, like, oh, where are all the women? Why aren't there more women in the industry? And the thing is that we are there, and there are probably more women in kitchens all around the world than people actually realize, but they don't get the recognition. And that's the biggest problem, is not being able to get that recognition, because not to call the media lazy, but in a way they can be. If they see an article about a chef, a male chef, and then he gets a lot of promotion, another paper is going to see and be like, oh, let's use that guy. Yeah. We've already got a lot of information about him. So then they use that person. So then it just grows from that. And then it's hard for the women to break through, which is why the Girls on Fire is good, but I think it's slightly missed the mark. You know, a little bit. And it's about, there's a lot of groups now, there's Women in Hospitality, or there's international groups as well that are gathering places now for women in the industry. And I think it's things like that that are going to help, because it is encourages women to put themselves out there. A lot of the more so overseas than I think in Australia, but a lot of women who head up kitchens overseas find it very difficult to leave the kitchen to go out and self-promote, because they've worked so hard. It sounds bad, but a lot of the time women have to work harder to get the same level of respect in a kitchen. And one of the points I make quite a lot is that if a male and a female walk into the kitchen in the same role in a new job, it's automatically assumed that the man can do the job until he proves them wrong, and it's automatically assumed that the female can't until she proves she can. So we often have to work really hard to prove that we can do it. And then once we're at that point, we can't always afford to leave and go out and self-promote. So it's a really tricky subject, but I suppose I did take a bit of offense to this all the picture is wrong thing, because of the feelings I have towards the Josephine Pignolet Award, and that it is, you know, it's based on an essay initially, and the panel's not looking at the name and going, oh, that's a female, but she can't write an essay. You know what I mean? It's like, it's based on talent and potential and not gender. So
yeah, I mean, I read your article. It's less directed at the industry as a whole.
Yeah.
It's more directed at the way media talks about the industry. Did you kind of suggest a way that we should move forward with it, or that?
I think it's they need to stop asking gender bias questions was one of the points I made. So don't, the amount of times I've been asked what it's like to be a female chef, I'm like, do you not, understand how ridiculous that question is. What am I going to start by telling you how great it is to be a male chef? I don't know. I've never been a male chef. Like, you can't... I've been asked what the advantages and disadvantages of being a female in the kitchen. What am I comparing that to? And things about... The tricky one is asking about, like, if you're going to have kids or having kids when you're a woman. And I'm not opposed to that question because I think a lot of women are probably genuinely interested in knowing how they can do both. But ask men the same question. Like, Mitch, have you ever been asked in any interview?
Nope.
What, like, starting a family, how are you going to balance that? Yep. They just don't ask men that question. And they need to. They just need to ask. It's not about women getting more recognition. It's about getting an equal amount of recognition.
Yeah.
So you've been asked that question about family stuff in interviews?
Yeah, I've been asked about, like, the work-life balance. Even in job interviews in the past, I've been asked in very subtle ways.
Sure.
You know, what are your plans for the future for, say, the next 5 years? And how old are you for in that five years' time and stuff like that? I'm like, yeah, right, okay. And, you know,
that's pretty rich to even assume that you'd stay in a job for 5 years in the first place.
I was like, right.
We want you to make cakes, not babies.
Yeah. I was like, I don't even know what I'm going to be doing in, like, a year. Like, you can't. But yeah, I think there's a greater issue, and it's questions like that of, again, I don't want to use the word lazy, but if more people start writing articles about female chefs because they want to promote talent and not a female, I think it'll have a flow-on effect, and I think that'll encourage more women to enter awards, which in turn leads to recognition, and then it sort of starts this cycle. So
yeah,
it's not going to be a quick fix at all.
A good first step would be, like, a blanket ban on putting the two words female and chef together.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your scenario of, you know, a male and a female walking into a job interview, like, the media would write about that as, like, you know, a chef and a female chef walked into it.
Yeah. It's like when you see the awards, the world's best female chef.
Yeah.
And that always causes a lot of debate, because it is like, yes, we need the recognition. But
it's also sort of insulting at the same time.
It's very insulting, because it's like, oh, you can play with the big boys over here.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what, fine, keep that award, but why don't you call the other category best male chef? That's all that needs to change. There's a lot of language and terminology issues in the way they phrase things, more so than, like, what they're actually writing.
So, like, a language thing. You feel it's more a media problem than an actual problem in the industry these days?
I think it's a bigger media problem than it is in the industry. I've definitely encountered sexism. I don't think it's specific to hospitality in any way. Obviously, that's what I am exposed to. But, I mean, even when I won the JP a few years ago, people I didn't even know in kitchens I've never even been into are just coming out and talking to other chefs. Oh, she only won because she's a girl, and they wanted it for their image and stuff like that. So you sort of can't win. You either don't win because you're a girl, or when you do win, it's because you're a girl. But yeah, I think for the general public, and I think you need more women in the industry, and I think that's a media issue, and that there was probably only one woman finalist, because if you look at the numbers of how many men compared to how many women there are in the industry, there's obviously more men, and therefore there's going to be more male entrants, and therefore, like, percentage wise you're going to have more finalists. So it comes back to the correct promotion will encourage more women, and that will, like, flow on to allow more to enter, and then, okay, maybe the picture will change and you'll have four women in there.
Yeah. Are there any elements of the food industry or food media that you think could use better representation?
Representation of women?
Yeah.
In Australia, I think we're generally trying pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least what I've encouraged. But yeah, I definitely think it's a language
Sure.
That needs to change. There's a push that if women are asked to be on panels or like give speeches and stuff like that, to make sure that you're not the only female.
Mm-hmm.
And then
so there's no tokenism.
Yeah, no tokenism, mm-hmm. And it's like, well, oh, we need a woman for this, but I can't find any. You were the only one I could find. It's like, well, that's completely ridiculous because there are so many. So it's a bit of, yeah, just need more exposure and the right kind of exposure.
Yeah, I will say from our end with this podcast, like I remember the first time you ever came on, you actually made a joke about, oh, I'm the one woman again.
Yeah.
And then we were definitely, when we try to have six members, including ourselves on those first year, it was always, you know, five guys and a girl.
Yeah.
Like it's on, that's on me to make the, like, you know, not, without using the word quota, that's on us to always, you know, not it's easy for us to fill it out with guys, to always have guys on. It's a little bit more difficult, you know, and we get more no's from women,
yeah,
in the food industry.
That's, like, that's something else.
A guy has never ever said no, I can't do the Mitchin, but we have got lots of women that we love in the food industry that have said no because they're not comfortable with, you know, talking about food, or they'd rather just not, which is totally valid. Yeah. But I just
don't want to come on your show. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, they fucking hate it.
Fuck you guys.
yeah, I think this isn't
me asking for a solution to my problem.
No, well, I think what you guys do in that you always try to have one or two females on the show, but you don't make it an active point. Like, this is our female on the show. Like, but it is in your mind that you need to, I'm imagining, have a difference of opinion.
Yeah.
And you get a broader range of opinions by having a
panel,
right?
When people argue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you get a different viewpoint, and that's a really good thing that you guys do. But I think when it comes to the women saying no, that's a real problem from our end, but the female side as well. We don't like to put ourselves out there, and I don't know if it... I think it's a combination of factors. I think it's the thing where they feel like they can't leave the workplace, where they feel like self-promotion isn't seen as part of their job, or they feel like they'll be seen as, you know, having a large ego, or look how great I am out here saying how great I am. That sort of thing.
I don't have an issue doing any of that for myself.
Yeah. I think that's
the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think men in general are more comfortable doing it than women.
That ego, and that it's easy for men to be out and self-promote.
Exactly. We've been taught that there's never any consequences to that.
Yeah. No. Whereas, and we're always taught to
be a lady,
you know, be a little bit more quiet and reserved. And so that's obviously a massive societal issue that I don't think necessarily hospitality will solve.
Yeah.
But that is part of it, and that's why I think this MeDigger recognition will help with that, because it'll allow other females to see what can be achieved, and I think that's really important. I probably wouldn't have entered the JP award if I hadn't been pushed a little bit. Mark came to me and said, oh, are you entering? And I was like, oh, I might do it next year. This is after I've already been at home, like, thinking of titles for my essay. But then there was just this, when I was asked, oh, are you going to do it? I was like, oh, you know what? Maybe I'll just do it next year. Maybe next time it'll be my time. And he's like, no, you're writing it. You're entering. You have no valid reason not to. And then that was it. So I had to do it. But it's just something that we don't naturally self-promote, and that's something more of us need to do. I was talking to a publisher, a food service magazine, had a lunch with her and a group of women who are doing a women in food service talk in September. And food service magazine has a new award, Women in Food Service Awards, four different categories, and it's all hospitality, not just chefs. And I asked her, oh, it was just after the article had come out, and I said, oh, do you have many applications for the awards, because I feel like Josephine Pignolet didn't have many women. I know last year the Age Young Chef didn't have any female applicants at all.
Wow.
And she said that they have been inundated with applications, like they have so many to filter through, they don't know how they're gonna find the time to do it, which I found really interesting. That
did you find out what the split between like front of house and back of house was?
No, I didn't. I don't know how many chefs compared to front of house, but I think there's like a wine award, a restaurateur award, and even like a just a general business award. So they might even not like be a face.
The Lexus Young Chef.
I'm not sure what that is. But I wondered if that response was because it's specifically for women.
It's for you guys.
Yeah. And we're like, oh, this is our time in our little box over here. and all of these other awards are just for chefs, not for female chefs. And that's why I think it's a much bigger issue than just who's entering awards. It's about finding really long-term ways to encourage women to do so.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, thanks for writing the article and for coming in and talking about it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a very well-written article.
Oh, thank you.
except for that title.
Yeah. No, but it put a lot of things that women in the industry have said to me, it made them very clear, very, very eloquently, and verbalized it in a way that even after hearing them say exactly that to me, I could never re-verbalize it and make it clear for somebody else. But that article, like, really nailed it.
Thanks.
You should make it like a requirement now that all articles you write have to have a tennis reference.
Maybe one day my dream will come true.
Lauren serves up
another backhand.
Lauren faults again.
Yes.
It's love all.
I'm going to write all
Lauren
this down.
Lauren Eldridge's hit new TV, hit new food show. Love all.
thanks so much for coming on again.
Thank you for having me on.
And all the best for the move and the new job. That's all super exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where can people catch you online?
Instagram, I think it's lauren.eldridge. And then my Twitter handle, which I very rarely use, is lauren_eldridge.
You can find Mitch online at Instakrill, at Krillin on the Run on Twitter. I'm at Levdog, LEVDOWG on all things. And you can find us facebook.com/themitchin or themitchinpodcast@gmail.com if you'd like to send us an email, especially if you find a fuckburger in the wild that you want to bring us attention to. Lauren, all that's left for you to do is to pick a song for us to end the show on.
Can I just put one of my all-time favorites on?
Yeah, of course.
Put whatever you want.
Dilemma by Kelly Rowland.
Amazing. Why is this one of your all-time favorites?
I don't know. When I was younger and still now, I listen to mostly heavy metal, but that song just gets me every time.
And this is the song that you listened to. Were you still in high school when that came out?
If that, right.
I forget you're much younger than us. All right, well, this is great. Dilemma by Kelly Rowland taking us out. Thanks so much for listening to Mitch, and we'll see you again next week.
Peace.
Thank you.
You don't know what you mean to me. Come on. I do. Oh.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.